All right, we're back. Hey yo.
Hey there.
My name?
My name is John Moore.
You're not listening to another installment of
Abolition-ish,
a podcast at the end of the world.
Stay tuned and let's have some fun.
Jordan Mulkey is a PhD student in the Department of African American Studies at Northwestern University. He got his bachelor's in English at Morehouse in 2019. He's interested in all sorts of stuff, including critical theory, black visual culture, black feminist theory, Afro-pessimism, and aesthetics. And his Twitter handle is Jatella, J-A-T-E-L-L-A. Yeah, Jordan, one, welcome to the podcast, and two, yeah, before we dig in, maybe share with folks, one, where in the world you are right now, what you're doing, and maybe another way to ask the question of what you're doing is how you just said it, like, what are you committed to right now, you know, how, whatever that means to you.
Thanks, John. It's so weird hearing you introduce me because we've known each other for such a long time. It's so formal. So I'm not really in the world right now. What am I doing? What am I committed to currently? I recently, accomplished a milestone in my department, feeling in limbo about, my academic future, which is a part of the kind of structure of feeling that academia is meant to produce. So I'm aware that, what I'm feeling is not at all unique or particular to me. But I'm currently attempting to recenter myself and my work and what my kind of fundamental questions are about, blackness in and out of the world, trying to recenter and reground. Yeah, I'm happy I'm here with you to do that.
Yeah, me too. I'm happy you could join us. Today, the black feminist writer and critic Bell Hooks died. And, all day folks have been mourning and reflecting about her work. And because she died today, and this episode was scheduled for a minute, we're not going to spend a ton of time talking about Bell's work. That would obviously also exceed an episode. I do just want to sort of mark it with that and note that, love was something that Bell Hooks was centrally concerned with. The question of black love, its possibility, its, as Fanon says, its perversions. I'm going to start off with a vague question that I'm sure will get us to somewhere, whether it's a story or something. And that is, what do you believe love is? And what does love mean to you? Maybe they're the same question. If so, you can answer it that way. But I didn't put black in here because I'm still thinking about what Christina Sharp said in a talk a few weeks ago. She was talking about this thing that her and Dion Brand have been trying to write for a while. And I think she titled it something like the Dictionary of Untranslatable Blackness. Apparently there's a book called The Dictionary of Untranslatables. And it's a book that some white woman, I think she's white. I don't know if she's a literary scholar or whatever, but maybe a linguist. But anyway, it's basically a book of words from a bunch of different languages that there's no great direct translation of. And the book is an investigation of why those words exist. What do they mean? Why is it so hard to translate them out? And when Christina and Dion found that book, they started thinking, what happens when you take any of these words that are quote-unquote untranslatable and you think about them in relationship to blackness? What happens to them? Do they still make sense? Do they cohere? So I'm still thinking about that. And so, like, maybe if we don't ask the question of black love first, but we start off with love and then black love, maybe we'll get something. I don't know. But yeah, what do you believe love is, Jordan? What does love mean to you?
Love. Christina shot me down, right?
maybe that's our answer.
Yeah. So I think the best way in for me in terms with this question is actually the quote that you gave me years ago. And I don't think people know that you gave me this, but I, like, it's actually kind of a kind of intellectual maxim of mine now at this point. Now, I think at this point, pretty well-known quote by Morton Spillett as a part of, like, a series of talks that she gave on intimacy, where at the end of the talk, the concluding remark is, you know, unless one is free, love will not and cannot matter. She's really talking about the relationship between, you know, slave masters, white slave masters, and black female slaves, right? And the idea, the rather predominant idea in a particular kind of strand of slavery studies that thinks of that relationship as, you know, possibly filled with romance, right? Possibly filled with some kind of love or care ethic that's actually worth its name. And of course, what she says is, you know, that's absurd, and that in fact the violence on the plantation is so kind of astronomical that the terms of their relationship, what Hartman might call the bonds of their affection, becomes irrelevant altogether, or unthinkable at least. But I think that, like, I say I would want to inflect that differently, because so much of what I've been trying to do, or so much of what I try to do with my work, and I guess this is something that I share with, you know, with Hooks, is think about, you know, the intramural. And this is, of course, a kind of thinking that not only Hooks has insisted upon, but, like, that Hooks has insisted upon because it's a part of a kind of black feminist imperative, or it's an imperative that black feminism has kind of taught me best. And so, like, what does it mean? What does love mean within black commons, or a black collective, if we want to even imagine one to be so. And so I've been trying to think about that phrase, that instructive, you know, that unless one is free, love cannot matter, as applicable to how we think about love in black intramural spaces. And what does it mean for love not to matter? I've been thinking a lot about that. How do we think about love as devoid of a particular type of utility and kind of symbolic meaning or integrity, to use again Spillett's word? That's kind of what I think about love. I'm thinking about love, you know, on one register as about affect, which we'll probably get to a little later, but about a kind of regime of affect, more so, that cannot account for particular things, or whose accounting becomes exhausted by violence.
You know, one way to have this conversation is to split it into two, like thinking about what is what do black people have to do with black love? And then what? And then what? And then the rest. And yeah, they're kind of tied up because, you know, we are not who we think we are. We are not. We are not. But the R is not. We're starting with what is black love to black people? What is love to black people? And you know, you mentioned utility, which I think is a really good word. And we'll talk about it in a minute. Like, blackness is like this salvific ethic that produces something for black people, that we're told produces something for black people, right? So if you're black and you love the Charleston shooter, or if you're black and you love the cop who stops you, or if you're black and you love the person who kills your child, there's some salvation waiting for you, either, you know, after this life or in this world, in the sense of whatever. I don't know what you get out of those things, but we are told we do get things, you know. So that, I really like that word, like that question of like, if black love doesn't matter, like going back to the Spillers quote, right? Like, if, and you know, I think you're right to say, yes, it's you know, she's talking about a very specific instance and we shouldn't take it out of context, but we also know the world's a plantation. The mattering of black love, I think, is a great question to get us going, because, you know, like, if I say black love doesn't matter, I'm open to critique of, oh, you don't believe in black social life. You don't think black people are human. You don't think black people are worthy. And these things obviously are synonymous, right? Like, human and worthy, or, you know, loving and worthy. I'm going to say it right now. Black love does not matter. So what does that mean? What I want to say it means is that, put it like this. If love is something that moves you, love is something that moves the world, necessarily black love can move the world. But I don't believe that. I think that black love can do something, but it is not, I think it's kind of anti-love. Like, as we, I don't know, I mean, this is such a loaded question, but I guess my next question then is, like, I'm gonna bring up the personal first, because I think if we're able to ground ourselves there, we're a little less floaty, and we're able to approach the masterclass thing with some gusto. So, like, talk to me about love in your life, love in your world as you find it. What is it? What does it do for you, if anything? What do you do for it? I'm like, it's like a dating show for grad students or some sick shit. You know, it's like a, that, I wonder if that existed back in the day when people used to do those video, like, blind date videos. I wonder if there was, like, a firm that specialized in grad students. If so, talk about a treasure trove of tragedy. Okay, I'm going to stop. Yes, you blushed. Continue.
A friend of mine told me once, who I was in undergrad with, that I was given this, I think I was at a meeting, maybe. You know, I was a part of some sort of organization at Morehouse that had weekly meetings, right, to talk about theory and philosophy. And it was a part of the Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Chapel, International Chapel at Morehouse College. And so one time at the meeting, of course, I was chatting, and I, of course, said, make these statements about love and love's impossibility, or love's irrelevancy, or, and me and this person who you know, reminded me of this event or this occasion, we're very close now, but at that time we weren't that close. And I remember it, and they said that they remember very vividly that after that meeting, their partner them and their partner got into a very rigorous debate because this person was siding with me and agreeing with me that love did not matter on the plantation. Mm. And if the world is a plantation, the world does not matter in the world. And that their partner was saying, well, what does that mean? What is this? You know, like, and it's so I had, unbeknownst to myself at that time, insinuated myself into a relationship, into the problematic, or produced the problematic within a relationship, precisely around this question of love. I want to clarify that I've been in love before, you know, and that I love someone. I have someone that I love. So when I talk about, and of course, you know, you have what we call loved ones, right, which is usually about filiation. And then we have, you know, again, as I referred to earlier, significant others, people who we love with a particular type of, on a particular kind of register that might be, you know, non-platonic, what the Greek might call eros, right? I'm dancing around the point. The point is that love, for me, has never not been a meeting ground for contest and war. There is something, that is to say that there is something about love that, in my experience, invites the most fundamental question, right? And you know, and I've experienced that as it shapes my relationship with the people who I wish to explain my relationship with them under that framework, or under that rubric, right? What I'm trying to say is that what love has done for me in my life is precisely problematize relationality itself. What love seems to do is insinuate a scandal within the notion or idea of relation. And so
if that was a text exchange between two people, tell me what it would look like.
It would look like, and we come, like you, I appreciate the question because, you know, it looks exactly how it actually plays out, at least in my experience. It's like, mm-hmm. Okay, you know, I love you. And then the person says, well, what do you love about me? There is a particular kind of, disorientation that occurs when we attempt to ascertain what it is that is lovable, what it is that is actionable about love, what it is that love does. Because when we ask a person, okay, what do you love about me? What we're actually asking them is, what are the measuring tools by which you are determining me as deserving of a particular kind of regard? And the reason why this is a particularly kind of black question is because the question of blackness is fundamentally about a question about ontological disregard. And so being black, I would suggest, kind of postures us to ask this question of love on a register that is not only lived, but because it is lived, is determining kind of what it means to even question life itself, right? Mm. What it means to question existence as such. We can't make the kind of nature-mind divide that Western philosophy would like to position us within. There's actually, that becomes untenable. And if that is untenable, then that does kind of make what you're saying, you know, that much more obvious. It's always about the exterior as well as how one is being infected by a notion of love, as much as how one is producing that notion internally.
it's not even the difference between being lonely and being lonely with a assassin following you. It's like the difference between being lonely and then being lonely with an assassin following you, and it turns out that you're also the assassin. And you're also living in an assassin training camp on Assassin Planet. Yeah. There would be no need to love my hated self if I was not hated. And I'm not saying there's a solution to that. I don't believe there is. Other than, I don't know, ending the world in conditions that allow me to be and need me to be. But yeah, that you really put the pin in it, and that like somehow it becomes like a choice without condition, or a choice without coercion, or a choice without context. And maybe that is what makes love not black love, is that love is quote unconditional, right? It is preceded by nothing but maybe recognition, a thought. You know, love at first sight is preceded by nothing. It's literally preceded by no relation. In fact, that's what makes love at first sight so sought after, is because it's the idea, I never saw you. I never knew you existed.
It's spontaneous.
Yeah, boom, bam. Now I need you. Now, yeah.
We have some real problems in this country that are deep and structural that have to be confronted with the truth of who we are.
I invite each and every one of you, listen to these different voices. Have the courage to say, let me see what this wrestling with white supremacy and black love is all about. In this class, we are going to be focusing on these powerful issues together.
You will learn how slavery and anti-blackness is foundational to nearly every American institution in modern life, even if we refuse to see it.
You may hear things that you find hard to believe. They are a testament to parts of our history that we've dismissed.
The story that you can tell about this country, about it being a land of equality and opportunity, who gave America that? We gave America that.
There has been this unbroken history of struggle for liberation for hundreds of years. Black people managed to create beauty in the very process of fighting structural racism.
Black love is that thing that makes you believe in American democracy, even when American democracy hasn't believed in us.
One of our jobs is to try to make there be as little racism as possible. A more important job is to see where the racism is and think about ways that we can get past it.
Race is a fiction. Racism is real. What do we do with that?
And it's only in having that understanding of what built the country that we're in that we can dismantle the parts of our country that don't live up to its highest ideals.
I'm John McWhorter.
I'm Sherrilyn Ifill.
I'm Jelani Cobb.
Nicole Hannah-Jones.
Kimberly Williams-Crenshaw.
Cornel West.
I'm Angela Davis, and this is Masterclass.
Black love, even if you think it is ours, whatever that means, just as every other black thing, it produces, and it produces value, and it is called upon to do things, such as Kimberly Crenshaw told us, believe in American democracy, even when American democracy hasn't believed in us. And I was keen about this. One, because it's not really a lie. I think she's right. And then black love is, and you know, and there were people who were very much like, what? Like, black love has nothing to do with America. you know, black love is what we've created in spite of America. And that's a very clean-cut argument that I don't believe. I think the more true and terrible truth is that black love, even as we've talked about it, as like endurance, what we do with and for one another to endure, is foundational to this terrible place. And I mean, that kind of makes sense, right? Like the endurance of black people being productive for a country that has, since its inception, relied on black labor, black power, whatever. That doesn't seem far-fetched to me. I think that folks might have been uncomfortable with it being so explicit. And then, of course, some folks were just annoyed because it was said as though it's something that we should celebrate and not something that should, I don't know, terrify us, provide us some perspective as to what black love is. Like, if it is the thing that makes you believe in American democracy, uh-oh. So I will just start there. So it was a masterclass commercial. It was a commercial for a masterclass. Commercial for a masterclass class with a bunch of black academics of various persuasions. What were your thoughts on that commercial? It was a lot. It was a whole lot. There were so many reasons to react.
Yeah, it was a lot. It definitely was a lot. But it brought me back. It definitely brought me back to the question of, you know, okay, well, what is the work of black love? Like, what is black love doing? You know, bell hooks even suggests in All About Love that, you know, love is not, I believe it's in All About Love, that love is not a noun, it's a verb, right? So we, like, if we don't take that for granted, if we believe that, then it's never a moment in which we should be talking about love outside of a grammar of use, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because we have to talk about what does it capacitate us to do or incapacitate us to do. And they've seen what became very clear to me with that masterclass is two things. The first being, what does it mean for black people, black scholars, black intellectuals, to be called upon to clarify the work of love in an imperialist regime that seems anathema to it, anathema to love itself, right? Why is it that black people are being, when black people are called upon, we are not called upon to talk about violence. We are called upon to talk about romance. And there seems to be a relationship between the beautification of the American project and black intellectual commitment to the question, to the practice, to the politics of love. Right? We are supposed to appear and make visible love within a regime of violence, for that regime of violence to appear to be something other than itself, or something not reducible to violability and conquest. So that was kind of like the first thing that made it, that became very clear to me with that masterclass. But the second thing that became very clear to me is that the question of black love becomes a way to stave off the question of death,
structurally mandated death, state-sanctioned death, the kind of necropolitical scene in which we live, the necropolis that is the imperial core. And that seemed contrary to, you know, of course, the insights of Bell Hooks, right? In All About Love, she talks, she had the whole chapter committed to death, thinking death and love, right? And what she suggests in that chapter is that love, as she says, empowers us to live fully and die well, such that death is not an end of a life but a living, right? Like, death becomes, quote, death becomes then not an end to life but a part of living, end quote, right? So there is something about transforming the character of death that Bell Hooks suggests love can do, I think, needs to be considered as also implicated in the reason why love becomes a means by which, the turn to love becomes a means by which we assuage or scale down the propensity and the force of death.
So on your first, on this thing of the verb, like, stop moving, fuck. Like, if Kimberly Crenshaw were instead have, if she instead had said, black love is the verb that makes you believe in America, or had she said, like, black love, so what she said is black love is the force, but if it had been like, you know, we believe in American democracy because of black love, that I think is really damning to all of us, right? Like, white people believe in American democracy because we haven't killed them. We believe in American democracy because we just kill ourselves, you know? Like, when you think about Joy James and the captive maternal, it's like, you know, for Joy, Joy might say, like, black love is the force, or black love is the thing that, you know, it makes you return to the community that has harmed you, or is the thing that keeps you somewhere where you will never be safe, right? That's not hopeful. It's not aspirational. It's not sexy. But, you know, it is beautiful in the way that Joy James put it, and she even says so. She's like, you know, isn't that a beautiful? It's terrible, but it's beautiful. Like, it's impossible, but the way she says it is, she says it's, quote, you know, it's worthy of you as this kind of impossible thing. And I wish that's what that masterclass, and maybe it is what that masterclass is. I doubt it, especially seeing some of them names. As soon as I saw Angela Davis's scarf, I was like, I know what's going on here. Mama stays with a scarf. I don't know if the scarf is supposed to distract us. Something I thought of when I first saw it was like, what are the stories that belong in this? What are the stories of black love that are worthy of sharing with, I guess, a white audience, a white paying audience? I know what they're not, right? Like, they're not going to show videos of, you know, Corinne Gaines killing the cop or trying to kill the cop that is trying to kill her and her child, right? They're not going to talk about the niggas who broke Asada out. They're not going to talk about black people who defend themselves and defend their families every day. They're not going to talk about, you know, caring for a black person who is addicted, caring for a black person who is disabled amidst being hunted. And that is what is so perverse to me, right? Is it's not about that kind of black love as a response to atrocious violence. And even that is fucked up to me, because we're supposed to leave that narrative hopeful and happy about how well prepared we are to endure another 100 years of that atrocious violence. But even beyond that, it's like, I don't even think that masterclass is about that. I think the masterclass is very simply, what can black love do for you? What can black love do for us? What can it do for America? And I mean, they're right. It has done a ton. It is inexhaustible, maybe. Maybe it's inexhaustible. I don't know. That's a question, maybe. The question of it being in service is not even a question. It's an assumption. And I do think they're right about that. I think that they're right that black love as like something is that is wielded. I guess, I don't know. It's just such a scary embodiment of like being so true and being so dishonest at the same time. That's why it kind of mind fucked me. Because I was looking at the images and I was listening to the music and then I'm hearing the words and I'm like, is this supposed to make, I'm supposed to be happy about this? Even a white person, even a white supremacist. I was like, if I was a white supremacist and I was watching this, am I supposed to feel good? So I don't know. And yeah, and people were like, oh, it's for white audiences. But honestly, I don't believe that. I do think that it's actually, I mean, yeah, it's for white audiences, but it's not for what they got out of it, in addition to a check, which maybe the check was enough. But like, what do we get out of pretending? I'm just thinking about, what do you get out of that? Like, what do you get out of figuring black love as this thing that, like, how can you say that we are all in, so the empire is indebted to black love? I don't like that sentence because it assumes that black people gave and not that we were taken and then taken from, right? Like, you know, it's like this, you know, like the, this, you know, this mammy that birthed the empire and she deserves her due. Like, I just think that's such a sick figuration, you know, like kidnapped people weren't volunteers. Slaves were not Samaritans. We are not benevolent. Like, we are captive. It's like we get to a point where we turn away from the alternative, which would be, you know, like, okay, black love has allowed America to grow and fester. Therefore, we have to take out black love. We got to kill that bitch because she is allowing things that should not happen. Like, that could have been the masterclass. Like, hey, look at all the terrible things that black love is responsible for. And, you know, people are going to be like, how could you say that? How could you say that's what they're saying? I'm not saying that. I'm just, right. I'm just switching the verb. I'm saying that black love is responsible for black genocide. They're saying that black genocide is indebted to black love. Empire is indebted. Oh, we have to pay our dues. We have to light a candle. What? Huh? As Hunter would say, huh? Like, am I tripping?
No, I mean, I agree. Like you said, there is, Fred Moulton has this beautiful quote, you know, in Love is the Message of Death, film by author Jaffa, where he talks about people thinking of slavery as something that absolutely incapacitated one's effective sensibilities. And what he says is that what made slavery so bad is that people were fully sensate, that they had all of their effective capacities online, that people were in the holds of ships, eating, fucking, breathing, dying, touching, rubbing, being handled, right? Like, handing. Like, I even begin to think about Hartman's chapter in Wayward Lives, Beautiful Experiments, where she just begins to list all the things, all the ways and tenses of being handled in the hand, and what it means to be ready at hand, and what it means to like be pushed and moved, and how all of these things are about how the effective capacity is the stage for violence. And so I say that because that's precisely what cannot be disavowed and what is also being said, or what is, that is the unconscious of what is being said in that masterclass, right? If there's a deep relationship, a deep debt that the empire owes to Black love, that debt has to do with the fact that love as an affective capacity became a scene of terror, a modality of perfecting slavery, to use Farley's language, right? So, and ensuring capital. So I think that we have to stop. What we cannot continue, or what we can no longer afford, is a notion of affect that, and particularly love as a part of that notion, as something not implicated in empire. And this is something that, you know, this is another thing that makes me rub up against bell hooks's notion of love, right? Because for bell hooks is going to say that love and brutality, or love and abuse, cannot coexist. And for me, when I read something like Corregidora by Gail Jones, or Eva's Man by Gail Jones, what becomes very clear to me is that there's something about love that is actually very conducive for the for terms of violence. You know, in Corregidora, Gail Jones writes, "Love and hate are two humps on the same camel."
Mm-hmm.
And like the last line of Corregidora is he held me tight, you know, like,
mm-hmm.
And what does it mean for that to have to hold the kind of duplicitous meanings of holding and being held, right? And that's something that Sharp allows us to think about.
Mm-hmm.
Think about, you know, most robustly.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, that inextricability between being held as in captive and held as in cared for. And how, you know, like this idea of Black love as salvation, I think it is not interested in attending to the held as in the hold, as in the captivity, as in the prison, as in the domestic violence, as in the, you know, whatever, surveillance, policing. The delinking of those two conceptions of being held is scary, especially because I just feel like it is so not attentive to how Black people move through the world. Like, you don't have to fucking read In the Wake to understand that you are not free in some sense, that you are prohibited in some sense, that you are punished and policed and terrorized in some sense. And you don't have to be a fucking theory girl to understand that that has to necessarily inform what love can and can't do for you. And so to see people who, you know, claim to be fucking historians of black experience to just sit there and I think I will say, you know, participate and profit from that delinking in the name of, you know, whatever they're calling it nowadays, black power, black joy, whatever. It's scary. But I guess maybe the question I'll end on is like, what do you think is possible when we don't delink those conceptions of love for black people? Like when we think of care and captivity in the same breath necessarily, because that is what the world is. Like I don't do that because I want to. I do it because I don't think that, like, I'd be making an error. Like with the information I have, it's important for me to think about those things together. And if I didn't think about them together when I thought about blackness and love, I would be making a mistake. So I guess my question to you is, thinking about blackness and love, black life, love, being black, love, black love, what do you think is maybe made possible or not? Because we're obsessed with possibility. What's made possible, more impossible, whatever? What do you think? What do you feel? What changes, if anything, when you're able to, in your personal relationships, in your work, in your thinking, in your waking life, when you're able to, or you try to, think those things together, hold them in tension? That's my last question.
I think the answer to that, I mean, the most direct answer to that is, you know, found in the work of David Maria. And I believe to be what I believe is the preface of On Black Men, you know, when he says, of course, following Fanon, what do we do about the unconscious that hates us? And by the end, the last line of the preface, I believe, goes something like, you know, well, maybe we just have to learn to embrace hate as our most intimate possession. And so for me, to think about the dual implications of the term and the experience of behold means that I have to become better acquainted with the way that whatever I think love is, or whatever I intend to enact as a instance of care, is constantly going to be at war with my capacity to bring an end to everything else. That there is something about love that allows me to endure, and that endurance is violent.
Yeah.
But that, on the other hand, I have no other choice but to endure. And so the only terms on which I can relate through a deep, what, you know, I see Tyrone Palmer is going to call a deep felt antagonism, right? Like where we just remain antagonistic to the very terms of our existence. We remain perpetually hateful of how it is that we are required to be with one another. And I think that that's kind of how I assume my relationship, you know, That's the kind of assumption that I carry into my relationship. You know, this is something that we cannot but do. And that in the very doing, we are constantly at war with ourselves.
Right. So it's like almost resisting, trying to resist that urge to alchemize a hatred of the world into something that keeps it going. Coming to terms with the fact, like losing the desire to displace that awareness, that might be self-love, you know? Like that might be black love. I would be okay with calling that black love. Like seeing myself and seeing my friends through that process of losing the desire to displace our awareness of how terrible this place is and how critical our suffering is to its functioning. Like, okay, we can call that black love. If y'all love the word so fucking much. Thank you, Jordan. Thank you for spending time with us.
It was beyond a pleasure. Yeah, I love you, John.
I love you too. I love you too.